there shall be an highway for the remnant of his people.
This woman was prepared. She had fasted. She had prayed. She had made that commitment to God. She had on her royal apparel. She had done everything she could. She knew that everything was at stake. She knew she was on doing God's business. When we're on God's business, we do not have to be afraid. And I see her standing there boldly and courageously reaching out and touching that scepter for everything that it meant to her, everything that it meant for God's people. And today, friends, you and I are reaching out and touching that same scepter.
Welcome to Highway for the Remnant Ministries. I'm Pastor Scott Schaefer, and I consider it a privilege to have you along with us this month. Many people are surprised, yes, even amazed, to learn that there's an entire book of the Bible that doesn't mention the name of God. I'm speaking of the book of Esther, written roughly 2,500 years ago, that doesn't mention God's name anywhere. And yet, of course, we find God's providential leading in His hand, working in behalf of His people all throughout the book. We're also learning that that book has much to do with God's people in the end of time, especially the stories. The story of Esther standing faithful for God reminds us of God's people and how they will be faithful just before Jesus comes. As I said before, it is a delight to have you with us. We're so thankful for your prayers, your support for Highway for the Remnant Ministries, as we want to stand shoulder to shoulder with you in proclaiming the three angels' messages. So with that little background, let's go live now as we go to this month's presentation entitled Esther's Touch.
Was something to be amazed at in and of itself, to walk down through. And we can see in our story this morning, as we pick up our story, we can see our young and brave and beautiful young queen Esther making her way down the grand hallway of the Persian palace. Picture with me, if you will, a little bit of that story in your mind. Picture as she's making her way down. The moment of truth has come. The moment of crisis is there. Her opportunity is here. Everything is on the line. And as she makes her way, she's walking past these beautiful palace walls where the gold is shimmering in the sunlight along the side. The beautiful tapestries are hanging down from the ceilings. It must have been something just to walk down through the palace. And here's this young Esther. Bless her heart, there she was with her maidens, attendants, or whatever you call them, as she makes her way into the king, into the presence of the king. Much is going through her mind. No doubt her mind was racing as she was thinking of the events of the last few days and the last few weeks. In fact, take your Bible with me now, back there to that Old Testament book of Esther. Back there to the book of Esther, and you'll see there the events that had taken place in her life and in the life of the Jews. Come back with me to start with in chapter 3. As young Esther makes her way and she's thinking about the events of the last few days, look at verse 8 of chapter 3. It mentions over here, it says that Haman said unto the king Ahasuerus, there is a certain people scattered abroad, dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom. Their laws are different from all people. These are strange people, king. You don't want to mess with them. Neither keep they the king's laws. Therefore it is not for the king's profit to suffer them. And if you look down to verse 13, letters were sent by post into all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, to cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, even the children and women, in one day, even the 13th day of the 12th month. They were going to, in one fell swoop, in one day, they were going to commit genocide and kill all the Jews in the entire Medo-Persian Empire. That was an empire, folks. For those of you that enjoy geography, that was an empire that stretched from Eastern Africa all the way to India. Huge empire. Today, that would include countries like Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Israel, Egypt, Iraq, Iran, and then a bunch of those Stan countries that I have trouble pronouncing. Uzbekistan or whatever, those little places up there. Huge empire. They were going to wipe them all out in one fell swoop. It's interesting, if you skip on down to chapter 4, you'll notice when Esther finally realizes what is happening, she has this little dialogue with her cousin Mordecai, who of course had raised her, and you'll see it there in verses 13 and 14 of those famous verses. And I just find this fascinating what Mordecai says. In Esther chapter 4, verse 13, Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, "Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. Don't think, young lady, that you're going to be spared just because you're queen. Don't think that you can hide your identity but so long. Don't think that if you're just going to sit there and do nothing, that you will be spared and nothing will happen to you. You'll get caught up in this too, young lady. Do not think that we are living, you know, it's interesting, the times we're living in now, do not think that we will not get caught up and involved in Satan's battles in these last days of earth's history." And then he goes on in verse 14, and I just love the courage, the faith, the fortitude of Mordecai. It just oozes through this verse. Notice in verse 14, "For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place." Young lady, if you keep your mouth shut, the Lord's going to raise up somebody else. Didn't Jesus tell the Pharisees, you know, if these people be quiet that are shouting my praises, the very stones and rocks will cry out? The question is, will you and I be part of spreading God's end time message? It's going to move forward. It will go forth. The three angels' messages will be proclaimed. The challenge is, will you and I be a part of it? If we keep our mouth shut, we have been blessed with so much as Christians and as Seventh-day Adventist people. If we keep our mouth shut, someone else will rise up. It doesn't matter position. Esther was a queen, for crying out loud. You know, and Esther, and Mordecai says, you know, someone will come from somebody else. God will raise up faithful people somewhere. We don't know where, and I don't know how, but He's doing it. And then comes that famous sentence and that famous phrase when He looks at Esther, commands her, and says, "Don't you know that you've been called for such a time as this?" Such a time as this. Do you realize there was a lot going on behind the scenes that we don't realize? There were some things we know. For instance, we know that in the days of Daniel, at least in the days when he was getting older in life and near the end of his life, which we're not told when Daniel died or even where or when or how old he was, but near the end of his life, no doubt, in the days of King Cyrus, Cyrus made the first of three decrees allowing the Jews to go home. Now remember, Daniel and then about 120 years later or so was Queen Esther. They lived in the Medo-Persian realm over there. Well, Daniel was in Babylon. Esther was further over in Shushan and so forth. And what is today, that would be Iran today. It's kind of hard for us to picture that the way we think of Iran today. But that's where she was during that time period. Cyrus made the first decree allowing the Jews to return, and a miracle of God after a three-week battle. It's just amazing. Three-week spiritual struggle in which Cyrus allowed the Jews to go home. If you want to take the time when you get home today and read that decree, it's Ezra chapter 1. Then along comes the king Darius a little bit later on, and you remember there were some people around the Jews and around Jerusalem who said, "King, you don't want these people rebuilding. These are bad people. They will turn against your laws." And Darius says, "Well, what in the world, what decree, what authority did they have? How did this happen in the first place?" He sends people back to the records and the archives and so forth and so on, and he ends up writing a second decree and basically reaffirms Cyrus' decree and saying they can go home and they will allow them to go back, and don't you stop the work. In fact, you're going to help pay for some of the expenses. He gives them the use of the king's forest and so forth. If you want to read that decree, it's in Ezra chapter 6. Then there was the next king after him was, the secular historians call him Xerxes. Xerxes, and that's X-E-R-X-E-S, Xerxes, for your history lesson this morning, is often known and recognized as the same king as the Ahasuerus in the book of Esther. Later on, another king after him by the name of Artaxerxes. He even had a funnier name than that. He even had a longer name, and you're going to love this. His name was Artaxerxes Longomanus. Isn't that a fun name to say? He came along. He gave the third decree. It's the most complete of the three decrees. It not only allowed the Jews to go home, but it allowed them to set up a government, reestablish the priesthood, levy taxes, and all of that. And if you want to read that one, that's in Ezra chapter 7. That one sets the stage and is the beginning point, according to Daniel 9, to the 2300-day prophecy of Daniel 8 and the 69-week prophecy, all culminating and, of course, pointing forward to when Jesus would be in the most holy place. The point I'm simply making this morning is that Esther, if she had not been faithful, look at all that was at stake. Look at how much was at stake, far more than even the lives of all the Jews, as important as that was. So much was at stake right here. And I say again to myself and to all of us, there's a lot at stake for you and for me too. We may not be a queen of a great empire somewhere, but God is just as surely and just as faithfully called you and me to a calling as well. Called us to be to faithfulness. Now, before the queen went in, before she dared to go in before the king, there were some preparations that went on. And I want to touch on three things of preparation that Esther did before she went in before this king. You're there in Esther chapter 4. Look down to look at verse 15, 16. Esther chapter 4, verse 15. Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer. I mean, after all, after getting that call from Mordecai, don't you know you've been called for such a time as this? What does this wonderful young lady do? She says in verse 16, "Go gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan," that was the capital city of Persia, "and do what for me? Fast." This sermon is not about a sermon on fasting, but there certainly is a place and time for that. I would also submit that the fasting is far more than just simply avoiding food. And God's people today, as we are getting close to the end of time, God's people are going to be fasting from the world. Fasting from the entertainment of the world and the things of the world and the adornment of the world and with the things of the world, because they know they're living in the time of going before the king. Or going in before the king. So she fasts. And she says, "Fast for me. I will neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maidens will do the same. Then I will go into the king, and if I perish, I perish." Notice that she fasted. Point number one, in preparation to stand before the king, she fasted and prayed. And you know, those must have been some incredible prayer meeting services. Can you picture it? Esther with her maidens and courtiers, or whatever you call them, attendants, whatever it was, ladies. You know, can you imagine that, those prayer services? Can you imagine what it was like for Mordecai and the other Jews throughout the capital city, maybe meeting in homes or business places or wherever, gathering together, fasting and praying? The message is very clear. What would happen amongst God's people, wherever we are, even if it's 2, 3, 5 people, 300 people, whatever the case might be, what would happen if God's people meet together and are seeking God and in prayer together? Fasting from the world. Yes, there's a time for the physical fasting. But even far more important than that, the fasting from the world, setting times aside to pray together. It might mean just calling your friend or another church member and calling them on the phone or their smartphone or whatever and having a little prayer. Say, "Hey, can I just spend 2 minutes in prayer with you?" What would happen if we prayed together as Esther did? That's why Peter said in 1 Peter, keep your finger there in Esther and take a look over in 1 Peter. Let's get some New Testament passages in here. 1 Peter chapter 5. What does Peter tell us over here? Verses 6 and 7. You know these passages. "Humble yourselves therefore under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him. For he does what? Careth for you. Humble yourselves there before God." Oh, folks, I'm seeing in my own life, and you know, there's too much pride, too much of self. I tell you what, when we humble ourselves, that's when God can use us. Bless her heart. There's Esther. She doesn't know if she can even do anything. The situation seems hopeless. Every Jew is supposed to be murdered. Yes, murdered. Even the women and children. Everybody. On one specific day that had been set aside. So what does she do? She does what God's people have always been doing throughout the ages. She gets on her knees and she's praying. Humble yourselves before God. Think of the early Christians meeting in their homes and wherever they were, meeting together, breaking bread, the book of Acts says, describing their times when they met. It didn't mean that they met for 24 hours together. It might have been only 20 minutes or 2 hours or whatever. I don't know. But they met frequently together. They craved spiritual fellowship and prayed together. And look at what God did. No wonder we are told in Great Controversy, page 464, that famous quote that we know so well, a revival of primitive godliness is our greatest need. Our greatest need? We wonder, how will we finish this work? Where will the money come from? Where will the resources? We look at the situations. We look at the challenges facing us all. God is calling all along and saying it's that revival of that primitive godliness. I love that expression. Not the fanciful worship. Primitive godliness. Primitive godliness. Okay, step number one that Esther did was fasted and prayed. Step number two, she made a commitment. She made a total and complete commitment. We've already read it there in verse 16. I will go into the king. And if I perish, Wow. It doesn't matter what happens to me, Mordecai. I may die. I may be killed going in before the king. But I still must take the chance and must go in before the king. We're beginning to see, and this, some people really struggle with this, but it's something so beautiful, and I'm still learning this too, folks. It's not about us. It's not even about our salvation, as important and wonderful as that all is. And that's been promised too, don't misunderstand. But it's all about the glory of God. It's all about His glory. If we perish, we perish. It doesn't matter what happens to us. Our faith is not contingent upon circumstances and the things going on around us. Our faith is anchored in the Word of God. How many people throughout the centuries have been in prison cells or been sent from their homes or whatever the case may be, hunted, sent out in caves of the earth, the lowliest of the lowly, despised of the world, and yet maintain their faith with Jesus Christ. No one can take that away from you. No one. Things can happen, but Jesus is always there. No wonder Job said, and he was mentioned in Sabbath school this morning, wasn't he? Job, he says in that famous passage, and some scholars believe that this is the climactic point of the book of Job, in Job 13, when he says, though he slay me, yet will I trust Him. Yeah, y'all know that verse. Though He slay me, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What matters is His glory. That's what matters. We think of 120 years earlier than Esther or so. There's Daniel's three friends. You remember them there standing before Nebuchadnezzar, the burning fiery furnace. We know that so well, the story so well. Remember what he told that king or what they told the king? We will not bow down and worship. Our God is bigger than your God. Thank you. Excuse us. No offense meant. But our God is stronger than yours. And He can deliver us from that fiery furnace. But even if He doesn't, we would rather be burned alive. Wow. We would rather be burned alive than worship a false god and sin against God. That is going to be the faith of God's people in the end of time. And we are there. We are there. Willing to die rather than dishonor God. Though I perish, if I perish, I perish. Now, the third point. First, she fasted and prayed. Secondly, she made a complete commitment and a decision to follow Jesus Christ. The third point is in Esther chapter 5 and verse 1. Now, it came to pass on which day? Now, wait a minute. This is interesting. This might be a little sidebar here this morning, but this gets fascinating. On the third day. You remember in Esther 4, she told Mordecai, she said, we're going to fast for 3 days. Remember that? 3 days. And yet, notice she didn't wait for 72 hours to pass before she finished her fast and went in before the king. On the third day. day. This is another classic example of inclusive reckoning. This is why some people really have a struggle, and they'll say that Jesus died on Wednesday and was resurrected on Sabbath. You know, have you ever heard that theory? And that they'll get 3 days out of that because Jesus said he would be there for 3 days. So, of course, they'll say, well, if he died on Friday, as you folks say, and was resurrected Sunday morning, how in the world do you get 3 days out of that? That's only about, you know, maybe 36 hours. We don't know exactly the time he came out of the tomb. We know it was before sunrise on Sunday morning. And yet here's a classic example of the Jewish thinking and the biblical way of thinking of inclusive reckoning. What do I mean by that? You and I look at this today. This is Sabbath, right? 3 days for us would be Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, right? That's the Western way of thinking. Inclusive reckoning says, wait a minute, the portion left over for today is one day. Sunday is the second day. Monday is the third day. Kind of a different way of computing things, isn't it? It's interesting. When Jesus died on Friday afternoon, that was one day. Never mind that he was only in the tomb, you know, from about 3 o'clock until that evening or whatever on Friday afternoon. That was one day. Sabbath is the second day. Early Sunday morning, never mind that it was only a little sliver of Sunday, but that was the third day. And I know some will say, well, wait a minute, Pastor Scott. It says 3 days and three nights. You only have two nights out of there, Friday night and Saturday night. Well, I would make the case, and I'm willing to be taught on this, but I would make the case that you could add in Thursday night as well. In fact, I would say Thursday night was the most difficult part of it all for Jesus. Yes, there was a physical torture on Friday. Yes, they scourged him. Yes, they whipped him. Yes, they put the crown of thorns, drove the nails. All that's true. But the worst part of it was on Thursday evening there in the Garden of Gethsemane. Fascinating. Right here, even in the book of Esther, we have a classic example of this. She didn't wait till 72 hours had passed before she went in before the king. There's another example of this, and I think it's in Luke 13, where they came to Jesus and they said, don't go up to Jerusalem, they're going to kill you there. And Jesus uses an interesting expression when he says, go and tell that fox. I love that expression. Go tell that foxy old Herod that I will do this and I will do that and I will do this today and then tomorrow and on the third day I will do such and such and so forth. Another interesting use of that inclusive reckoning. Yet, okay, but what did Esther do? On the third day, Esther put on what, ladies? What kind of clothes did she put on? Her finest, the royal apparel. Oh my, you know where I'm going with this one. She didn't just look into her closet that day and say, oh, I'll grab any old dress. No. She chose the finest dress that she had. Must have been beautiful. Wow. She goes in before the king. Notice she puts on her royal apparel. She is prepared. And of course you can tell where I'm going with this. Does not Revelation 19 describe God's people in the robes of Christ's righteousness? Wearing the royal apparel. She took care of what she was putting on before she went in before the king. She put on her royal apparel. God's people are going to be doing the same thing. That's why in Zechariah 3, it describes that beautiful story there of Joshua the high priest and how he's standing there in filthy garments and rags before God. And Jesus comes and says, take those off of him. Put new clothes on him. This is a beautiful message of righteousness by faith. The beautiful fact that Jesus Christ can forgive you and me and even do more than that. Help us so we don't have to go back to those sins anymore. You and I can have the perfect character of Christ's righteousness in our lives today. It can happen because of Jesus' grace. That's being doubted and debated and argued against today. And I'll even say, and I won't pick out names, but there are actually books and sermons being printed and preached, even in Adventist churches today, that totally make a mockery of what I've just said. And totally deny what has now become coined as the last generation theology. And they will say, it's not really possible for a last generation to be faithfully living and perfectly revealing God's character in the world. Some have even gone so far as to say, and I've heard this argument too, the argument says the world God's character does not need to be vindicated because it was vindicated at the cross. Everything was revealed there. Interesting argument, isn't it? The problem that they're missing out on is the fact that, yes, salvation was provided at the cross. But all the way along, salvation has been played out in the lives of people like you and me. That battle has been fought in the lives of people for centuries. And it will be so until the second coming of Jesus. There will be those wearing their royal apparel to go in before the king. Now, it was the king after Esther that wrote the decree that allowed the Jews to go home for the third time, the most complete one. We understand, and I'm not going to get into all this morning, but we understand that 2,300 years later, from 457 B.C., brings us to 1844. You can do the math yourself. There's no zero year. Make it easy on yourself. And we understand that what that meant is simply that Jesus went from the holy to the most holy place. Now, that's radical. Because what that means is, Adventists are coming along and saying, wait a minute, we've turned the whole Christian movement up on its head, because the rest of the Christian world, especially the evangelical Christian world, they have the judgment at the second coming of Jesus. Adventism comes along and says, wait, we are already living in it right now. We have been ever since 1844. Jesus is going into the most holy place. You and I are living in the real, in time, one time, day of atonement in the end of the world. It's not talking about a specific 24-hour day anymore. It's talking about the time period in which you and I are living. You and I will be going in before the king, just like Esther from 2,500 years ago. Going in before the king, it is imperative, and it's a joy, and it's a privilege that you and I, just like Esther, can put on the royal apparel. Our lives can be changed. The character of Jesus can forgive our sins. The victory can be ours. We can be dressed and ready for that day. They're going in before that king, the great king of the universe. The time has come, the moment of crisis. There's Esther, bless her heart, making her way down that hallway with the beautiful golden walls and the beautiful tapestries and her beautiful garment, whatever it looked like, ladies, that beautiful dress that she had on. She's going in because the moment of truth has come. The moment of crisis is here, and it is the same for God's people in the end of time. Standing before God, wearing the royal apparel of Jesus Christ. But now let's get to the climax of the story. You'll notice in chapter 5 and verse 1, there were three things that she did to prepare. Remember, she fasted and prayed. Number 2, she made a decision of commitment. And number 3, she put on her royal apparel. Then it says in verse 1, it came to pass on the third day that Esther put on her royal apparel. And then notice, it's interesting, the little details the Bible gives. She stood in the which court of the king's house? The sacred place. The holy place. The place of the royalty, the place where no one was allowed to go. That's where we find her standing. You realize Ellen White talks about this. This is amazing. She talks about Jesus moving from the holy to the most holy place. Ezekiel talks about that too. You know, the wheel within a wheel and all of that. And the wheel that can move. God's throne is portable. Come to find out, God's throne is portable. It can move there. And Ellen White talks about how there are those well-meaning Christians who are in the holy place and they're praying to Jesus and they do not realize that Jesus has gotten up and gone into the most holy place. And she actually goes on to say that Satan comes in and impersonates Jesus while God's faithful get up and follow him into the inner court. God's people know where he is. That's why Revelation 14, in describing the 144,000, it describes them, that says they follow the Lamb, and you'll forgive the old King James, I love this word, it says they follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. That's fun to say, whithersoever he goeth. In other words, they know where Jesus is. They're following him there. They're not afraid to go even there into the most holy of holies. Does that mean that God's people come and barge through the door? I don't think that's what that means at all. And yet Paul says in Hebrews, over there in Hebrews 4, how does it go? Let us therefore come boldly into the throne of grace. Esther stood in the inner court of the king's house, over against the king's house. The king sat upon the royal throne. My, oh my, can you picture the scene? There it is. Again, the gold, the beautiful tapestries, the courtiers, the ambassadors, the dignitaries, the officials, the servants, the guards, the soldiers, the generals, whatever, the maidens of Esther. There they all, there in full array, and everyone, you could hear a pin drop when they see the queen enter into a place that she was not invited. The king is sitting on his royal throne. I wish, maybe one day the Lord will show us a video in heaven. I wish I could see the king's face at that moment when he sees Esther standing there. It was so, moving on to verse 2. This is Esther 5, verse 2. It was so, when the king saw Esther the queen standing in the court, that she obtained favor in his sight, and the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. And you'll forgive my crazy imagination. That's what it is. Folks, do you think that Esther stood there with trembling and shaking hand, very nervously, reaching up to touch that scepter? I don't think it was that way at all. This woman was prepared. She had fasted. She had prayed. She had made that commitment to God. She had on her royal apparel. She had done everything she could. She knew that everything was at stake. She knew she was on doing God's business. When we're on God's business, we do not have to be afraid. And I see her standing there boldly and courageously reaching out and touching that scepter for everything that it meant to her, everything that it meant for God's people. And today, friends, you and I are reaching out and touching that same scepter. Too many today have walked into that royal palace room, have walked into the throne room of God, and they turn around and they run, and they don't want to touch that scepter. The detractors of the last generation theology are backing out the door and running. Others are backing out and denying the truths of our faith, denying it and leaving it behind, and are afraid to touch that scepter. Friends, we don't have to be afraid to touch. The hand of faith reaches out and touches. Maybe in your life and mine, there are choices that have to be made, decisions that have to be made, callings that God has laid, claims that He has laid upon your life. Never be afraid to take the step of faith and reach out and touch that scepter. It might mean being willing to make a move for God and a place that God has called you that you never even dreamed of. It might mean being willing to take that stand and go before your employer and tell them, by God's grace, I cannot keep the seventh or work on God's seventh day Sabbath. I must keep it holy before God. I will do everything I can to work with you in other times, but I must take a step of faith. Maybe that scepter is the choice of a spouse that you will have in your life. If there's a young person today, I would say to you today, if you are dating someone that's not of your faith and not of the Seventh-day Adventist faith, end it right now. And I say that boldly and courageously because God is calling you. Don't be afraid to reach out and touch the scepter that God has given. God has given. And I know what people will say. I've heard it too. Oh, don't you know we can convert them? You can convert them. And yes, if you look hard enough, you'll find some couples where that's actually happened. Praise God. Praise God that that's happened. But for every one of those, and I can tell you from experience as a pastor, for every one of those, there's probably 5, 10, 12, 15 where it doesn't work that way. It works the other way around. And even in homes where the spouse is even supportive of the person coming to church, may even come once in a while to events and things at the church, there is still that shadow that the servant of God describes. What is that? What does it mean for your life and mine to reach out and touch that scepter? Taking the hand of faith and saying, Lord, I don't know what's going to happen. This may cost me my job. This may cost me my life. This may cost me everything. But I'm willing to reach out and touch what God has for me. No wonder then it says God's people are coming boldly to the throne of grace. Look at the people of the past. We can go back and see throughout history. We can see there the people of many ages, many time periods, taking steps of faith, reaching out and touching that scepter. Today, you and I stand on their shoulders. We stand on their shoulders. And we might say today, it's our turn. It's our turn. As Esther reaches out and touches, there's so many promises that God has given, so much more that God wants to do and in and through your life. Look with me again back to the New Testament. Look back to 1 John chapter 5. I just This is one of my favorite passages of the Bible. And I know there's many. We could be here all day talking about favorite passages. But look at this one in 1 John chapter 5. Look at verse 14. And this is a 1 John chapter 5, verse 14. This is the confidence that we have in Him, that if we ask anything according to His will, He hears us. And if we know that He hears us, whatsoever we ask, we know that we have the petitions that we desire of Him. God's people are confidently making choices. And sometimes those choices come at great sacrifice. Sometimes those choices might mean tremendous persecution or struggle or trial or whatever. Some of you, or many of you no doubt, have already been through that in many ways, in many different forms. But God's people are having the confidence to reach out and touch that scepter and to pray and to plead with God for His leading and direction. Taking the stand as Queen Esther did at a moment of crisis, at a moment of truth, at the hour that God had called for her. The question is, what about you? What about me? Third selected messages, page 356. Ellen White describes there, we can be overcoming, the God's people will be overcoming by laying hold in faith of the divine nature. All the promises that God has given to us, you and I can know and appreciate. You and I can experience that. Never afraid to reach out and realize that we are living in the most holy place of the heavenly sanctuary experience even now. Have been ever since 1844. We're living there in that time even now. Now is the time. I've often reminded of that story in Genesis 32. And I find this a fascinating story too, where Jacob wrestles with that angel. Gentlemen, this one's for us. It's really for everybody. But there's Jacob wrestling with that angel. Of course, he realizes after a while that he's not just wrestling with a robber, is he? He knows exactly who he's wrestling with. And even at one point, we know the story so well, the angel reaches down and touches his thigh, knocks his thigh out of joint. And I don't know about you fellows, but that makes me hurt just thinking about it. I wouldn't want to wrestle anybody in any good health. I don't think I would do very well as a wrestler. But can you imagine trying to do it with your hip out of joint? But Jacob realizes there's something more going on than just the physical struggle and physical mastery over an opponent on the wrestling mat. This is something far greater, and he's wrestling. And what he's pleading with God is he is saying, God, I will not let thee go until I know that you have forgiven me. I know all the sins of my past and all the deception and all the stuff that I did and all the mistakes I made and all the poor choices. It's all coming up to now to hit me in the face full well. And Father, I will not let thee go except you bless me. That prayer, that experience will be God's, the experience of God's people in the end of time as well. Hanging on for dear life, wrestling with God as it were. Doesn't mean that we're physically stronger than God or any of that foolishness. But it does mean that by prayer we are seeking God and we are wrestling. We are saying, Lord, I will not let thee go until the blessing is there. I will not let thee go until I know that my sins have been forgiven, that I can be among God's faithful people. I will not let thee go until these three angels' messages are proclaimed around the world and I can do my humble part, whatever it is, in sharing that message. I will not let you go. There's Esther. There's Jacob. And countless others who've stood there and reached out and wrestled and touched the scepter. Will you? Will I? What choices will we make? What decisions will this entail? What sacrifices will it involve? But I'm beginning to see that when we're following God, there is nothing that is worth keeping us out of heaven. Nothing that is worth walking with Jesus Christ. And walking with Him. No wonder, again, I come back to that passage in Hebrews 4. Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace. Thank you. Speak, Lord, for thy servant hears. Speak, Lord, for thy servant hears. I am but a child, yet thou hast called my name. There must be a special task for me to claim. Speak, Lord, tell me all thy will. Speak, Lord, in a voice so still. Though the task be great, or though the task be small, I will trust in thee alone and give my all. I don't ask for riches. I don't ask for fame. I don't ask that honor be heaped upon my name. I only ask thy presence to ever be the same. Speak, Lord, for thy servant hears. Come, Lord, take me by the hand. Come, Lord, teach a child to stand. Show me where to go and tell me what to say. Give thy word to light my path and point the way. Yes, Lord, thy command is heard. Yes, Lord, I obey thy word. Now I feel thy power, and now I see thy plan. Mold me as a useful vessel in thy hand. I don't ask for riches. I don't ask for fame. I don't ask that honor be heaped upon my name. I only ask thy presence to ever be the same. Speak, Lord, for thy servant hears. I don't ask for riches. I don't ask for fame. I just ask for the honor be heaped upon my name. I only ask thy presence to ever be the same. Speak, Lord, for thy servant hears.
Vital End Time Ministry of Highway for the Remnant is made possible by your faithful prayers and generous support, enabling us to spread present truth messages at home and abroad. To contact us, visit our website at highwayfortheremnant.com, or you may email us at remnanthighway@hughes.net. You may also use the enclosed envelope for a change of address or to submit the name of someone who would appreciate these very important messages. Our prayer is that when Jesus appears the second time, he will find a people rooted and grounded and proclaiming the three angels' messages.